This is Strategy Taken, a podcast about hard decisions and how strategic leaders in financial services make them, with your host, Luis Sorzella.
Welcome to the Strategy Taken. Today, I am extremely happy because I have my friend Hoda Mehr here with me. Hoda is the founder and CEO of StockCard.io, which is a platform that makes investment research digestible for individual investors. She's a NASDAQ entrepreneurship milestone maker who started investing as a teenager, assisting her family in managing the family's portfolio. And before starting Stock Card, she led or played a key role in several strategic projects or product development for multi-million dollar software products in companies like Symantec, Aimium, and Sony. Hoda lives in California with, she said that she lives with her husband and her Rottweiler puppy. I've seen the pictures. It's definitely not a puppy.
I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me, Luis. I'm very excited to do this. Yes, the puppy is, he thinks he's a puppy and we still think he's a puppy. But yeah, maybe at 6 years old, he's actually full grown Rottweiler, no more puppy.
He's so cute. But yes, definitely not a puppy. So StockCard, for those who don't know, again, is a platform that makes investment research digestible for individual investors. It's a very interesting concept on a market that a lot of things that have been happening. Hoda, maybe give us your version of what StockCard is and why the world needs a StockCard.
Yes, definitely. So StockCard is sort of came through this side hobby of mine or side hustle of mine while I was still in the strategy world and doing corporate strategy. And the reason I thought the board needs a company or a platform that makes investment research digestible comes from all that conversation that was happening in this side hustle of mine. And what was a side hustle? It was a private Facebook community of thousands of individual investors that would talk about the stock market, cryptocurrencies, or even investing in the startups at all times, every hour of the day. And there's a lot of interesting things happening in that group, which we will talk about it gradually over the course of this podcast. But one of the most important things I've learned is this disparity in the world of investing for individual investors between speed of transaction, speed of investing using apps like Robinhood in the US or many other sort of low cost, no cost trading platforms that are popping up every day in every country, and the speed or the quality of investment research, the disparity between the speed of transaction and the quality and the speed of decision making. And for me, it became very, from the conversations in that private community, it became very obvious that investors have become able to transact fast, but they're getting more and more confused about what to invest in. And regardless of everything that is out there available out there to help them, the distance between these two is getting bigger and bigger. People are making less and less quality decisions, but transacting faster and faster. And so that's why StockCard came about, to create this parity between high quality decision making and the speed of transaction, so we can help decision-making and quality investment decision as close to as one-click experience that exists in low-cost, no-cost trading platforms. That's sort of the genesis or the story or the need that we found in the market, and we want StockCard to fill that gap.
And that's very interesting because, again, we are living in an unprecedented time where it's very easy and you have a lot of firepower on the hands of individual investors. But on the other hand, you also see all those statistics that overtrading actually destroys value, that people are, they can do whatever they want, but they don't know how to make use of all the resources that they have available.
Yeah, spot on. That's exactly it. There's a lot of a lot of people are enabled, and there will be millions and millions of people that will be enabled all around the world to make transactions as fast as possible through their phones on when they're sitting on the couch or when they're on their way commuting to work, if there's ever any more commuting ever happened, I don't know. But so they can make transactions from all everywhere and anywhere on any time of the day, and actually any hour of the night as well. But there is limited focus on enablement or allowing or helping people to actually make quality decisions with the same speed. So that's basically the need in the market.
Hoda, so where do you think that investment technology is going? If we fast forward the world a few years, into like 5-10 years in the future, where is this going?
Yeah, I mean, to answer that question, we need to look at what are the sort of demographical and technological trends that are fueling the market, right? So those trends gonna help us figure out where the puck is going. And obviously there is a lot of conversations around whether individual investors will continue to invest or not. A lot of people are of this opinion that during the COVID-19, we had this like rally of individual investors just getting involved in investing, but that was just a fad and then it may not come back. So there's like a huge group of people that believe individual investors are not going to be as active in the market as once they were in during COVID. But back to the trends, we need to look at what are the fuel for this market? What are the power forces that are moving this market? So we can talk about a few of those trends. One is just what we talked about at the beginning, low cost or no cost transaction platforms. There's no stopping to them, right? Obviously, Robinhood started in the United States, and then there's a lot of other ones that are popping up in the US. But then when you look at globally, when you look at the global market, you see that all other countries are following the US footsteps. We actually receive a lot of requests on our platform to access our platform for insights and intelligence by non-US, no-cost brokerage apps outside the United States. So we get almost every month, we get requests from European companies or startups that are creating something like Robinhood for their own country. So that's just one force. There's no stopping. This is a model that worked and created a lot of financial gain for the startups who created this low-cost model or no-cost model. So that is continuing. The second one is along the line of like enablement of people to make investment transactions and whether they're going to continue to do it or not, this whole notion of fractional share investing. So fractional share investing is that if Google or Alphabet's stock price is $3,000, $2,000, if you are a young person or if you're just investing, you're probably not going to go and buy pay $2,000, $3,000 just by one share. And where does that one share going to take you? But fractional share investing allows you to invest $1, right? Or $5 or whatever amount of money you want and get a portion of that one share. So that's another technological force that is continuing in the world. So in the US is happening and you see it anywhere else as well. We see it in a lot of other countries as well. So again, those reduces the barrier for people into entering into the market, and that trend does not stop it. Another very powerful demographical trend that I believe it's very important is what's known as wealth transfer. It's estimated that in the United States, up to $60 trillion worth of assets are being transferred from baby boomers or parents' generation to their younger kids, right? The millennials or Gen Zs after. So you get this significant amount of wealth is going from a parent generation to the kids. And the kids, when you look at their financial behavior or their tendencies, they're very much so self-directed people. They don't trust financial institutions as much as their parents trust them. Because of the familiarity with technology, they like to take ownership of a lot of their own decisions, including money and financial decisions. So you're making a generation of younger adults that are getting, you're making them a lot more richer because they're going to inherit all this money, and they have really high self-directed tendencies when it comes to managing finances. So there's a lot of other forces we can talk about it, but maybe those are the three to talk about. Technology enabling people to transact and invest, and they're becoming richer and have more assets to make investment decisions for. So there's no stopping to this self-managed or individual investing trend that are actually getting stronger and stronger as years goes by. So in the next few decades, we're going to basically see a lot more self-directed decisions around a bigger even amount of assets in stocks, cryptos, real estate, startups. So it's not limited to stock market, obviously, but generally in investing, there will be a lot more self-directed investors out there.
Are investors becoming smarter, or they are just getting more powerful tools?
They're absolutely getting more powerful tools. Getting a smarter, I think it's very difficult to answer whether they're getting a smarter. I mean, by nature of having access to all these tools and applications, they're getting smarter, right? But are they making more smarter decisions? I guess that's the question. And I have a lot to say about it. I think that's the whole reason behind why a stock card came about is intervening in this market and realizing we're only enabling one side of the market, but we're not enabling better decisions or getting it smarter. So that's why a stock card comes in. So hopefully with tools like a stock card and obviously many other ones out there that hopefully come in and see the need the same as the way as we see it, investors are also getting it smarter. So the jury is out. We'll see how Stock Card does and we'll see how other platforms do. And then we'll figure out whether we also have smarter investors or not.
Well, we look forward to that. I understand that that's exactly the topic of the story you have to tell us today, right?
Yeah. So I thought of, and when you and I talked about doing this podcast, I thought about what would be a good strategic decision that had a lot of big implications on my personal life, but also just life of our team and hopefully the life of our users that comes with a lot of uncertainty and a lot of big implications around whether to do even the startup and whether we take this direction or take another direction with the company. So yeah, I wanted to go through that decision-making process of what led us to start focusing on this specific problem in the market versus any other problem in the market.
Okay, so that what happened?
Yeah, so I think we talked about some of the initial sparks that I've seen in the behavior or the conversation of that private community of users we talked about around the disparity between decision-making, speed of decision-making and quality of decision-making. But and at the time, I was still working in strategy for technology companies. So that was that, you know, I had this option of decision making between if I want to start a startup at all, but also if this is the problem I want to solve. And I want to set the foundation by showing how much uncertainty was involved in that decision making in terms of what to do, right? So I reached out to a few friends who've been in startup world and explained to them, this is a problem I see in the market. And almost all of the people I talked to told me this is this problem. So many people have tried to solve this problem and they were not able to solve this problem. So this is an unsolvable problem. By unsolvable problem, I'm referring to enabling individual investors to make better investment decisions. That's what's considered as an unsolvable problem because so many others have tried and they haven't been. We still have so many individual investors that make bad decisions. So the number one uncertainty point was feedback from many other people that I spoke to, and they said this is an unsolvable problem. Why do you want to spend time on it? And then I actually even spoke with a few VCs, investors. So the investors who would fund the startups. And the second uncertainty point around it came about. So the problem, some people said it's unsolvable, and another group of people basically said, individual investors are not meant to manage their money at all. And so why would you even, this is a trend that's gonna die because this is the opposite of what people should do. So you should create a platform that forces people or encourages people not to manage their money actually by themselves and then give it to the professional. So that was the second point around this. So the problem was unsolvable and the problem was even not a problem. Like there was not the right problem. The right problem from there, that was VC's point of view, was just don't even enable them, force them to or encourage them to not to do it and do something else instead. So when you get these strong feedback, those are very strong reasons not to do something when you hear feedback from other people. And I guess that's where the uncertainty started, around deciding what should, despite all that, I decided to do it, and we can talk about why in a second. But yeah, that's sort of the context.
I really want to get into that. But before we go there, you said that like the idea of StockCard, the problem you're trying to solve is to help individual investors to make good decisions, right? What is a good decision from a perspective of an individual investor?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So a good decision from a perspective of individual investor is a decision, an investment decision that is aligned with their goals, what they want to do with their money, right? So if somebody comes and say, my goal is to have some fun in the market and just like hang out with my friends and, you know, chat about it, I want to be part of it. You know, it's been called YOLO, you know, you live only once, trading or just having fun. And this is similar to like, if I was playing poker with my friends, or if I were playing anything else online with my friends, this is the same thing. So that to that person, good decision-making is a good decision-making that results into fun, or results into some like high emotional reactions to things, right? So that's a good decision, because that person's goal was that. And then for another person, a good decision is, oh, I want to have a side income because I want to be able to gradually become free of like the paycheck to paycheck life. And I want to be able to fund some of my monthly costs from the stock market or from investing. That's another goal. So a good decision is a decision that results into consistent monthly income. And some other people say, my goal from investing is that my kid would be well off when they graduate, or when they want to start college, or they can pay for their tuition. So a good investment decision is long-term, in 20 years, when the kid goes to the college, they can actually have some capital to be able to allocate it. So it's very, it's a very personal and goal-oriented decision. You can't just say, oh, it's because this guy is, or this girl is trading, it's doing a bad thing, right? Because their goal is having fun, or their goal is just to learn about trading. And it's not a bad decision. It's that person's goal. Obviously, there's like elements to it. Like you won't go borrow money from bank to have fun, just the same as you won't go borrow money to gamble in Vegas. So there's those elements to it. But yeah, the good decision really goes back to what people want to achieve with their money. And that's one of the foundations of like, you actually nailed it in terms of some of the stuff that we're going to talk about later, is that why I still thought, despite all the feedback I got, there's a need for a StockCard is one of the elements, is that we can't just like write a universal prescription for everybody and say, you have to invest the way I'm saying you to invest, because people have different goals from their investment, you know, their investment and trading behavior, basically.
So this is why you decided, despite all the... Despite your feedback that it was an unsolvable problem and that it was a problem that should not be solved, this is why you decided to move ahead with this value proposition.
I think it was one of the reasons, but one of the most important reasons for me was when I looked to me, I guess this is something I learned from Charlie Munger. I really like, obviously, stuff similar to a lot of stock market investors, Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett. I think I've learned a lot from them, from like reading what they teach or they share. And they always talk about, or Munger always talk about, incentives matter. Incentives, in order to figure out what people do, you need to look at their incentive, right? And the incentive drives action. And to me, when I looked into the industry, the financial services industry and financial content industry in general, I realized the reason this problem seems to be unsolvable is that nobody cares. Nobody cares if individual investors make money, because nobody has a financial incentive. The people or the platforms who are supposed to help individual investors to make decisions do not have financial incentive to help them make better investment decisions. So let's unpack that. So I say nobody cares if individual investors make money, because let's talk about it. So there is the trading platforms, but how do they make money? They do not make money if I make money, right? They make money by selling the order.
And if you park your money there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So there's two kinds of like, yeah, there's two kinds of like these trading platforms. There's like a Robinhood likes that if they make money, they don't make money on AUM, right? Like they make money on order flow. So their biggest financial incentive is for them to encourage you to trade more. So trade faster, trade more, check your a brokerage platform 10 times a day, because you will react to things, and then you would trade more. So regardless of whether you make money or not make money or whatever your goals is, the trading platforms would benefit from your active participation in the market. And regardless of whether you make money or not, they make money. So they don't care if I make money. And then you have financial media companies. So these are where people go and read articles or like watch videos and things like that. And how do they make money? They make money from ads, ad revenue. Uh-huh. And where is the ad revenue coming from? If you show emotional reaction to market or get angry or get sad or click and constantly get engaged with their content. So it has nothing to do with the individual investors making money. It has everything to do with emotional reactions to the news and clicking. So financial media companies don't care if I make money as well or not. And then you get a whole slew of tools out there that they would want to help you make better investment decision. But the way they make money is through either engaging you more or selling you more data, right? So it's not about making it digestible or making it easy and then even encouraging you to do less. It's all about let me sell you more subscription, or let me sell you more of the same, more of the data that I was able to get from elsewhere. So they also don't care about individual investors. So that was, for me, the decision making to go about the world needs another platform that helps investment research digestible. And there is a reason for StockCart, is that we would be the one who care. We are the one who is going to care about individual investors making money, because our incentive is going to be highly aligned with individual investors. And to me, that was really the moment. The moment I realized no one cares and there needs to be someone who cares about it, was like, okay, everybody is looking at it at the wrong angle. That's just sort of like the main reason that convinced me, despite all the feedback, that we should act. That there's a reason, there's an important reason for this company to exist, and we need to go solve this problem, basically.
I really like that. So how does StockCard make money when your clients make money?
Basically, what we do with our users is that we give our platform for free at the beginning, right? So you could stay a free user for as long as you want, as long as you're not a power user, right? So you could use a StockCard platform 5-6 times a month, and there won't be any charge. We only charge you a subscription fee if you are a power user, right? So it is aligned in terms of, if you're just engaged and if you just want to learn, if you're just doing a few, we never want to ask you for more money. Mm-hmm. But one thing we actually introduced this year is introduction of our B2B offering. So we would now charge corporations or like other brokerages, platforms, and things like that who do want to provide that digestible insights to their users, because they realize they have to create that value for their users. Mm-hmm. And then that would allow us to basically subsidize subscription revenue from all of our users, hopefully at some point, and allow corporations to basically pay for accessing our platform, so that bring our platform to their users. And in that way, it's not about selling ads, because we never run ads on our platform. It's not selling about orders. It's truly about providing that digestible insights to our users when and how they need it, and getting paid through the B2B relationship that we established with brokerages. So it's all about that.
So I really like that. So what you're saying is that the key innovation is a business model innovation, more than the platform and the technology and the service to align with the objectives of your members.
Yeah, I think it's even one step before that. It's the problem exists in the business model in the market, right? So understanding the problem in the market is related to the whoever that is supposed to help individual investors to become better or not. They are incentivized from like marketing point of view and branding point of view. And obviously they're not bad people by any means. Like, we're not saying these platforms are bad people or evil. They want people to make bad mistakes. We're saying on surface, they might have the intention, but the problem that has led into this problem appear to be an unsolvable problem sits in the business model. Nobody's incentivized to care for individual investors, bottom line. And I think the problem really exists in the business model, in the market.
So pretty much you got to a point in which you decided, you saw there is a need. You understand that that a barrier to achieving that need is exactly the incentives and the business model. Why do you think that other people didn't realize that?
I think there's a lot of people probably realize that, but it's a difficult problem to solve because a lot of, maybe 10 years ago, the technology or the volume of the money or the assets that were managed was not big enough for people to care, right? Mm-hmm. It goes back to those technological and demographical trends. It's sort of like, it's now is the time to build a platform that solves this problem. 10 years ago was not the time to solve that problem because the people or the users, the target users that you were trying to solve for, didn't have enough capital or they were not enabled from a technological point of view to make those transactions. It's almost, you would first need to enable people to actually do that action, which is something like Robinhood or some other low-cost fractional share platforms are doing right now. And then you would enable millions and millions and millions of people all around the world to be able to do this. Then it becomes an important problem, right? Because it really goes back to timing. It was never as important as today, and it was never as meaningful as today to solve this problem for people to care, right? Because they probably couldn't have made enough money 15 years ago or 20 years ago or 10 years ago, because the number of people would actually have the money or actually make that transaction were not enough. Now, as we talked about at the beginning, we have millions who are unable to make the transaction because it needs only $1 and you only need a phone to be able to do that. But also you have all these wealth transfer, as we talked about, from parents to the kids. And it's not only about a stock market, right? To me, it's also along the line of enablements or technological forces that are shaping the market, which we didn't talk about at the beginning, is that it's not only a stock market, right? It's now cryptocurrency is a significant amount of capital goes there, whether you believe it or not. There's also like real estate. So there's so many technology platforms out there that enable you to own fractional shares into a real estate project now. So before you need a significant amount of capital to even like buy a single family house or like a complex to be able to even the real estate investment would be meaningful at all. And most retail investors or individual investors wouldn't even have the capital. But now you have all these technological platforms that enable you to invest $1,000 in a real estate project, a residential or commercial. So that's another one. And then another one is the startups, right? So the regulations, in US at least, Reg C, it's known as Reg C, has allowed anyone, non-accredited investor with not significant amount of capital, can actually invest in the startups through crowdfunding platforms. So now every asset class out there is being opened up to retail investors. So to summarize, I guess, and go back to your question, is that the time is now because of all these technological forces. 10 years ago, people probably realized that, but it's just not significant and meaningful enough to solve that problem. So people design business models and make money elsewhere or a different way, for it to financially being viable. But now it becomes financially viable because you have significant mass who are interested, enabled, and have the money to participate in the markets.
Hold on, kudos to you and to your team. That's fantastic. I really look forward to seeing how StockCard.io is going to evolve in the future.
Perfecto, thank you.
So if one of our listeners would like to either learn more about StockCard.io, and that's, I'll put the link to your company on the description of the episode, or get in contact with you, what should they do?
The best way is to email me. I mean, I talk to everyone and anybody about this topic that we just talked about. I think it's the most important topic. So you can email me at hoda@stockcard.io. So hoda, hoda@stockcard.io. And you can find me on Twitter. My DMs are open. My handle is @hodamer. And I generally, as a team, we're very open and we always talk. All of us in the team answer our live chat with our users on our website. So anybody who ping us, everybody in the product team get a notification that some of the users or someone on the website wants to talk to someone. So we don't do like, oh, customer service department. We basically, product team answers to people, and I'd be part of a team. So yeah, hodo@stockcard.io, Twitter @hodomer, or just on the Stock Card and ping us on the live chat and tell whoever that answers you, I want to talk to Hodo, so they tag me on it.
Awesome. Thank you.
I appreciate that, Luis. It was a really good conversation.
Thank you for listening. If you are open to knowing more, you can subscribe to our podcast and find us on thestrategytaken.com.